Friday saw a change in direction when it comes to City Hall's housing policy. Instead of the status quo, which saw developers pay a fine to the city to avoid social and affordable housing obligations, the city is trying to pay developers to get that off-market housing built. Mayor Soraya Martinez-Ferrada announced on Friday the city is scrapping the Règlement pour une Métropole Mixte, also known as RMM or 20-20-20. The bylaw mandated 20% social, 20% affordable, and 20% family housing in new builds over around 5,000 square meters and up. But experts say that policy was only ever partially applied on the ground. And it was a contentious one because most developers chose to pay a fine rather than build the housing the city wanted. Now, Ferrada says she's moving towards a system based on incentivizing developers to build, quote, off-market housing. But, the city says, they'll also make their own land available for non-profit housing projects. They're looking at 80 sites with 40 ready to go. To get a sense of the new direction at City Hall when it comes to housing, CKUT spoke to two voices, one in favor of City Hall's new direction and one against it. Nicholas Harvest is a community intervention worker for the REAL, Point St. Charles's Housing Committee. Here's our conversation. We're talking about an announcement made last week by Mayor Soraya Martinez-Ferrada. To change the contentious RMM bylaw, also known as the 20-20-20 bylaw. You know, when you heard this, what was your first response?
Well, you know, we were never a big fan of the RMM, okay? Here in Point St. Charles, we always had a culture of, like, of intense negotiations with developers. We'd go up as far as, like, 45% inclusion of social housing and community projects in development projects that would show up here in the neighborhood. You know, the RMM kind of, like, made our jobs a bit more difficult. And at the end of the day, what we realized was that developers would much rather give money, like the tax, you know, that came into play, which got the city of Montreal, I think, around $55 million, which isn't a huge amount. Or they would just ignore it and build whatever they wanted, as was the case with the Children's Hospital downtown, and just pay the fine when it showed up later on. So the RMM was not a good tool. It was something that we criticized very adamantly. But if you're going to remove something, you might as well replace it with something that's comprehensive. So that's kind of our fear. More than the inclusionary process, it's once again, it lines itself into a vision that the problem is that we just lack housing. There's like a supply and demand problem, which in reality is not the problem. The issue is an affordability problem, right? Like the units being built right now are being built by private actors that have one motive, and that is profit. Right? And that's the situation we're finding ourselves in now. The city of Montreal seems to want to facilitate private actors to build private developments with a possible tack on of X amount of units of housing. And once again, I know I'm not the only one saying this, but the idea, the words matter, right? And when we talk about out-of-market housing, or in French, hors marché, it's a deviation of what we used to call social and community housing, right? At first, we were talking about affordable housing, which meant nothing. Now we're in non-market housing, which stipulates that the units or the project itself will be held out of the zone of speculation. But we have no guarantee of that.
So, yeah, you said that basically there's more that the city could be doing to ensure that housing is actually affordable for the people who need it, for the people who are struggling. I'm going to go through a little bit of what the government has proposed. You know, one of their measures that they say they're bringing in is that the city is looking to leverage the land that it owns. They found 80 available lots for, they say, off-market and mixed-use projects, and around 40 of those are ready for development, and they will be made available to nonprofits. They're putting up a map online March 1st. What do you think about this part of the announcement?
It's worrisome. It's worrisome in the sense where we have no guarantee of who these nonprofits are going to be. We have no guarantee if community actors will have a say on what's being built on them. And we have no guarantee that the city of Montreal is just going to sell certain parts of public land to private developers to build their projects. So once again, this kind of lines into the issue during the municipal election we went through, was that Ms. Martinez seems very apt to say things that have buzzwords like, we have to have private actors and community actors come together and build projects. We want affordable housing, we want non-market housing. But what really matters is the legislation and the direction the city of Montreal is going into to build those social and community housing, which as is now, I don't see anything that replaces the RMM. I know that the 20% is a temporary measure, and then later on they'll come up with something else. But the damage is already done, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, what the City of Montreal needs to do to quell this housing crisis is not facilitate private actors to build more unaffordable housing. It's to use the levers they already have. The City of Montreal has public land that they can attribute to build social and community housing. The City of Montreal has a paramunicipal a wing of its bureaucracy called the SHDM, la Société d'habitation de la Ville de Montréal, which can buy already existing private properties and put them out of the private market and give them back to the population as a right. I would have wanted more of that. There are some very, very vile and reactionary developers and property owners that, you know, keep tenants in poorly maintained housing units that harass their tenants. I would have liked to see a more punitive measure on her part to remove the housing stock from their portfolio and put it back to the public good, which something that Projet Montréal didn't want to do. So if you're saying we're going to improve upon this work that was poorly done by Projet Montréal, and then you offer nothing, I have a hard time in seeing how it improves the situation.
I want to follow up with one thing that you said, which is just like, we don't know when these public lands get sold, like who they're actually going to, who these groups are going to be. I mean, I know that the FRAPRU, which is a social housing coalition, they were worried that money for public projects or public lands was going to end up in private hands. But it seemed to me in this announcement that the city was saying, well, we want nonprofits to develop this public land. We want it to go to nonprofits. Mm-hmm. I understand you saying it would be great if the city's own tool, like the SHDM, did that work. But is there still a possibility that it's going to end up in private, even though they're using this language of, in French, au BNL, but like nonprofits to develop these projects?
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. One of the things we saw recently with the kind of the cavalcade, let's say, of people trying to solve the housing crisis, right, where consortiums of private developers coming together to build their own nonprofits, to have public funds to build, quote-unquote, affordable housing, but at a higher rate, right, like at a higher price point. That's a fear that we have. We also have a fear that a lot of these lots of land will be distributed to, you know, known, quote-unquote, nonprofits that do very selective projects. Like, for example, we have a project here in La Pointe of a certain amount of land that was given to UTSIL, which is a nonprofit that built housing for students, right? Like, there's a consequence to that to a certain extent, right? Like, X amount of students that are coming to the neighborhood will want X amount of products, let's say, food, cafes, what have you. And that can change the fabric of a neighborhood. And once again, the issue being, the city of Montreal can give financial levers to build housing, right? It can say it's going to give it to nonprofits, to OBNLs, what have you, right? The provincial government has stemmied a lot of the money going to smaller housing projects or community housing projects to favor larger consortiums of quote-unquote nonprofits, or as they call the développeurs qualifiés, which kind of show up like a conquering army to say, well, we're going to build this community, move aside, we're going to do what's best for you, right? Without any real community input. In the history of Quebec, this has never been how community and social housing has been done. It's always been done in tandem with the community, with community actors, even with community nonprofits. And I worry that that's kind of out of the picture. But once again, I have no certainty because there's nothing written. We have to take what the mayor says as the word of God and then just hope that what she does is correct, which is problematic, you know? Like, we were never a huge fan of, like I said, we were never a huge fan of the RMM predominantly because it allowed private developers to finagle their way out of the contribution of allocating land to build social housing and to instead give money to the RMM fund. A good way of fixing that would be to have an assured amount of social housing come out of the program. We don't know what that means now. We don't know what that's going to look like. It's a further upending of the natural ecosystem of development that we used to have. So I can only expect it's going to get worse.
Before you, I talked to an urban planning prof at McGill, Dr. Richard Schirmer, and he was also critical of the RMM bylaw, but for different reasons. He said the RMM was never fully applied in Montreal, but he also said if it was applied, we'd probably see less development as a result of it because developers have to be backed by financial actors that are looking to make a profit, looking across other markets in North America. And so in a certain extent, if we want development in Montreal, it has to be competitive on a larger scale with these expensive cities like Toronto and Vancouver. But you know, you're saying, well, that's not our experience in the point. We could get double the amount of social housing that the bylaw called for. I want you to explain the difference between, you know, what he's saying, which is just like developers need a guaranteed profit and the RMM was threatening that, versus what you're saying you saw on the ground, which was actually we could get a lot more and not cut into the profit margins enough so that these projects were abandoned.
Yeah, it's a very good question. With respect to this urbanist teacher, the private market, when it comes to building housing, has historically always failed. And if we're in a situation now of a housing crisis, it's because we've allowed the private market all of the benefits, all of the leeway, all of the rights to build whatever it wants, right? Here in the point, what ends up happening is we'll squeeze a developer when it comes time for them to propose their project. They usually want to build in density, so we know that requires a change in the zoning before they build their project, right? Then you say, hey, listen, we would like at least 45% inclusion of a social housing project. What that looks like is usually it can be in two ways. They can give a certain amount of land for the community itself to find a development company, to find a construction company, to decontaminate the land, and then take on the project on our own. Or what it can look like is what we call in French a clé en main. The developer builds everything, he builds you a building, and then sells you the building later on. In any case, the developer will make profit. Right? Whether it's the people living in their units that are at an exponentially higher rate of rent, or in selling off a project that's already built to community actors. In which case, they may not be able to recoup the maximum amount of profits they could have, but at a later date, whether it's in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, the amount of money tenants will be paying them in their private projects will make their project profitable. But the only way you get that is if you have a relation of struggle with the developer. The developer has to feel squeezed so that you can say, listen, this is what the community wants. We're not going to let you go ahead and build this project unless you give us X amount, right? And here in the point, I mean, I can only live in the reality I live in, right? Like, I look at the canal, people are building things. People have always built things. You look at Griffintown, people are still building things, right? It had nothing to do with the RMM. You know, and once again, the problem with that analysis is that we look at housing like a consumer good, right? We look at housing like I'm going to go buy some bread at the store, right? But housing isn't like that. Housing is a resource, right? If we as human beings don't have a place to live, then we become homeless. And then the state has to take over the cost of what that means, right? So in any case, we're allocating more resources to private developers to make more profit. And then public coffers are taking over the damages that encompasses, right? That's my real fear. The city can only do so much when it comes to developing new property, but there's already an existing housing stock. I think of places like Verdun, for example, which doesn't have a huge amount of land to develop. You have to go and recoup and take over the already existing housing stock, make it affordable, and then people will be able to live in it. There are apartments that exist in the city that cost $1,900 for a 3.5. Who can rent that? You know what I mean? This question of affordability isn't only in terms of development. In terms of the management of our existing housing stock and the management and the central planning of what our housing stock will look in the future. You know, a lot of these developers have very different incentives in terms of the physical geography and geometry of their projects. They want the nice high-rise condos to be closer to the water, to the canal, to the river, so that their clients can have a better view, right? Why can't that be a social and community project? There are issues in terms of how high they want to build. Developers want to make as much profit as possible, so they'll go as high as possible. What does that mean for us as a community? Does that mean our view from the canal gets blocked because someone had more money and then made you unable to maneuver the high line of your city? These are all consequences that englobe the building of these incentives for developers. You know what I mean? So to me, it's a non-starter. The second we start looking at this problem like a supply and demand problem, we've already lost the mark.
So then how do you squeeze developers? Because I've talked to other housing committees who say, wow, we wish that we could do what they're doing down in the Point, right? But we just can't. Why can't they and why can you? And then how, at the city level, would a housing policy, I guess, learn from, you know, what is really like a small, well-organized neighborhood and put something, you know, across different neighborhoods, across different boroughs and realities and contexts where the reality on the ground is quite different?
Yeah. It's a neighborhood that has a lot of history behind it, you know. So we're very proud of what we do here in the Point. But it's not alchemy. It's not magical. What we do is we have our list of social housing candidates. Right now, it's around 2,143, give or take, right? A lot of people see that as a waiting list. But here at The Real, we don't see it as a waiting list. We see it as an army, right? If a developer wants to have his way, well, we'll tell him, listen, good luck. We can have at least 100 to 200 people at the door of your office tomorrow morning with placards in their hands telling you that your project will not pass. It's through that community combativity that you get developers to play ball. A developer's main focus is profit. You can make that profit motive as hard as possible for them to achieve, or you can make it as easy as possible for them to achieve. You can say, listen, you can build your project, give us 50% of the land, and build us a social community project. Okay, you know, you can discuss with that, but you can only discuss and negotiate when you have the bigger end of the stick. Then comes the issue of provincial incentives. At the end of the day, the city of Montreal can't do everything. It couldn't do everything under Projet Montréal, and it can't do everything under Ensemble Montréal. Certain communities that don't have that same combative nature or that combative history still require huge amounts of money to build these projects, which is why it's problematic that the provincial government is lacking when it comes to it. The provincial government has been incredibly aggressive in terms of allowing these private developers to do what they want and restricting the amount of resources that are going towards communities to build their own projects, you know?
And you mentioned that the city doesn't have all the power here. This is, again, what I heard from my other interview with this McGill professor, mm-hmm. is just the city can do so much. And there's a different approach, or at least a slightly different approach being taken by the municipal administration of Ensemble Montréal, which mm-hmm. they say they want it to be more flexible and agile. And so they're going to offer incentives for developers instead of this fine-based system to build social and affordable, because as you said, people were just paying the fine. They weren't actually building things on the ground. Now, in their announcement, they say they're setting up a committee that's going to be made up of representatives from the private and nonprofit sectors. They're going to look at, they say, all possible incentives. That includes financial incentives like tax breaks, public domain occupancy permits, et cetera, et cetera. But what this professor I was talking to, what he said is, you know, it's much more interesting to look at incentives that don't cost the taxpayer, things like maybe building an extra floor or, you know, getting a little bit more for developers that will offset the costs of building truly off-market social housing. When you look at this in line with what powers the city has at its disposal and what they're willing to do, because I know you talked about expropriation, but we currently, and it's worth having that conversation, but we don't have an administration that's going to take that seriously currently. In terms of what they are actually looking at, you know, what do you think about, I guess, what that will actually do on the ground?
Yeah, I'll take this question in two parts because it is very interesting to me. Whenever I hear the word flexibility, we have to be more flexible. We have to give them what they want. We have to, you know, restrain our own urbanist laws or urbanist code to allow them to build whatever they want. That, to me, is a recipe of remaking Griffintown. And Griffintown was a mistake. Griffintown was a horror show. It was horrendous what they did in that borough, because what ended up happening was that private developers had the leeway to do whatever they wanted. They had the zoning laws changed. They could build in height. And when you speak to folks that live in Griffintown now, it is a nightmare, right? There's no sense of community. There's no sense of cohesionness. There's no sense of it being an actual neighborhood. It's what's called a transient neighborhood. Folks are in and out. There's folks that can rent the high-rise condos that are in the neighborhood, and then but they can also rent one in Miami. So they have no attachment to the community, no attachment to the history of the neighborhood, right? So I can only become prickly when I hear the word flexibility. The other portion I'll add is what the city can do now with the already existing housing stock. Before Projet Montréal was kicked out of power at the municipal level, they had done something that I found very smart, which was they looked at all of what we call SROs, all of the single-room occupancy apartments or buildings in the sud-west of Montreal, and they bought a bunch of them. They bought a bunch of them because SROs, single-room occupancies, are what's considered like the last safety net before someone becomes homeless, right? And if you can't afford a 3.5 that costs $800, then maybe you can afford a room that costs $400 in the hopes of, like, you know, getting yourself back on your feet and, like, financially becoming viable to rent an actual apartment, right? They bought a lot of those SROs because they were quickly becoming hotels, right? Airbnbs, right? One of them here in The Point was bought off by Henry Zevriev and quickly tried to turn it into a hotel illegally, right? The tenants in that case have been fighting him tooth and nail and have won most of their battles, right? The city saw that and realized, well, listen, if we think these are a valuable resource to defend against the homeless crisis and against the housing crisis, let's buy them. We're going to remove them from the private market. So in that case, the nature of their financialization had changed. They're not there to make a profit. They were there to be now a resource that folks can go and be a part of if they needed it, right? That's the logic I'm saying. Ideally, like you said, I'd love if the city of Montreal expropriated housing from villainous landlords, right? But the city of Montreal can use its funds to buy certain amounts of housing, right? They can buy that housing. They can give it to the SHDM as a part of its real estate portfolio, and then manage it in the way that they're managing housing now. Pointe-Charles has a bunch of SHDM buildings, and they're amazing. They're well maintained. The managers deal with tenants in a human way, and the risk of losing your apartment for the whimsy of your landlord isn't a part of the equation, right? I don't know why. I guess I know why, or I suspect why we're not going into that as a city, but like that would be the way to solve the housing crisis. You take the already existing housing stock that is unaffordable, you socialize it, and you put it back on the market at a lower rate because you don't have to make a profit off it, right? We're never going to build our way out of this housing crisis. It's an affordability crisis, and if you cannot start putting dents into the very unaffordable market that is here now, it's not by building apartments that are going to be even more expensive that you're going to solve that problem.
Nicholas Harvest, that's all my questions. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. With that said, I have to say one last thing, Jules. One last thing. So if I can have one last call to action to your listeners, be involved in your housing committee, get to know your neighbors, defend your community at all costs, and make them aware that if housing is a right, then they you have to put the resources behind that right. We cannot let private actors dictate the rules of the game. We, members of communities across the island of Montreal, have to make that a right. And if we have to mobilize to make that happen, we will.
That was Nicholas Harvest from the Real Recoupement Information Logement, Pointe-Saint-Charles' Housing Committee. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Jules Bijal with the Local Journalism Initiative.